Tax Committee will come to order. Members, today we have in front of us the Transportation Finance Bill. Senator Murphy, Senate File 2521. How would you like to proceed?
Well, Mr. Chairman, first, if I could have somebody on the committee offer up the amendment that needs to go on.
I think before we do that, Senator Murphy, we're probably going to see if we got a quorum here. 1, 2, 3, 6. I think we're one short. Oh, Senator Mawaz here. I guess we're here.
I'll offer the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble offers the A-19 amendment that's being distributed.
Mr. Chairman, while the amendment's being distributed, this amendment is going to put the bill almost in the exact same shape as the bill that's moving through the other body, and I'll explain some of these changes. First off, front page, you see the numbers up at the top on lines 1.3 through 1.7, and then again on 1.11 through 1.13. These just put the numbers into place according to the rest of the amendment. So this just adjusts the overall numbers. Let's see, the second change.
Thanks.
The second change is on lines 14 and 15. What this does is it just says that those appropriations to Greater Minnesota Transit, Port Development, and to the Humphrey Center for the UPA agreement, and I think you find those on pages 3 and 4 of the bill, It just makes sure that everyone knows that those are one-time appropriations. This is a slight deviation from the House bill. They're going to have to use a technical amendment on the House floor to make this change. This just clarifies that this is a one-time appropriation. The third change is in relation to the state troopers that are in the bill. We authorize 40 more state troopers in our bill under the public safety section, which starts on page 5. On page 6 of the bill is where the troopers are at. We're going to remove the goal to get to a complement of 600 because I think that ought to be 1,000, but all south of Cook someplace, Mr. Chairman.
North of Cook. Senator Tomasoni probably would like them further south than that, if I was going to make a guess on his behalf.
Someplace south of Brainerd, then. Mr. Chairman, this is the goal of 600, I think, is a little too easily reached, because if we put these 40 state troopers on that this bill calls for, we're going to be pretty close to 600. And once again, I think that the State Patrol does a heck of a good job, and I think that they could do better with some more troops. And I think that putting 600 in there is maybe a little low. It should be something north of that, but south of Brainerd.
I'll be driving 55.
Mr. Chairman, and then this amendment also on page 1 of the amendment, if you see lines 26 through, let's see, how far down do we go? About 2.5. Just on page 1 there. This is the debt service surcharge. And what we're doing is we're removing the indexing from this bill and using the debt service fluctuator that is in the bill. And we're going to put a penny on top of that so that the debt service can write up to 3.5 cents instead of just 2. But we offset that with getting rid of the index. The index would cause a lot of people heartburn. They felt that that's just putting tax increases on autopilot. I have a little different swing on it. I think it was the responsible thing to do. But as we all know, you got to pass a bill around here to get a law. So that's what we've done.
So, Senator Murphy, when that eventually goes up to 3.5 cents, does it stay there for how long a period of time?
Mr. Chairman, it's going to stay there until that 3.5 cents is able to capture all of the debt service charge. Okay, it'll be about 2047 and then start clicking back down. 2047? Okay. And then that pays off all the debt on these bonds that we're going to issue. Mr. Chairman and committee
Mr.
members,
Chair,
if
Senator Sundrum.
Was that like the year 2047?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sundrum, you're correct, but
okay.
At least it's not indexing, which
okay.
gives many more people heartburn than this 3.5 cents. Mr. Chairman, that just goes to show, and I'm going to stop here a little bit with the amendment, but you know the reason why we're in here, and it says really clear in the legislative auditor's report, the reason why we're in this mess is because we issued a bunch of debt back in 2003, and we kind of let our mouths overload our ability to pay, Senator Sinjum. And I think the legislative auditor says that real clear, that if you're going to issue debt, you better have a stream of revenue to pay for it, because it shows in his report that we went from spending 65% of our money on maintaining our roads, which was barely enough to get the job done, and when this administration issued all that debt, it flopped it right around to where the bonds were used on construction, as the Constitution provides. 65% was in new construction, and 35% was in maintenance. And that's the biggest reason why the roads in our district, Senator Sinjum, have completely fallen apart. I mean, well, except for Highway 52.
Right.
Now, Highway 52 got advanced money under that bonding program and got fixed, Senator Sinjum. We all know that. It was a project that needed to happen. But it happened over the roads in my district,
sure.
over the roads all around Rochester, and even in Rochester in a few places. Highway 14 is a good example that runs through there. It needs a huge influx of money to rectify that road. And so when all that money got ate up in debt service, it left very little for maintenance. And so all of our roads fell apart, especially those roads in districts where they had a large project like Highway 212 or the Rock 52 project that sucked up all the money in that district. There was nothing left for maintenance. And we're going to provide at least a way of capturing the vast majority of the debt service. I mean, if you want to build, you got to pay. This amendment also changes that bonding program from $2.2 billion to $1.8 billion. We had to scale it down. Bonds cost a lot of money. At $2.2 billion, that's worth a little over 8 cents a gallon of a gas tax increase to pay the debt service. At 1.8, it's still high, but at least it's not 8 cents a gallon. This amendment also has some language in it, and I believe it starts on page 3 that just basically says that this bonding money that's allocated to District 7 be used to accelerate certain highway improvements, and there's some language in the bill that kind of describes what kind of roads they're talking about.
Senator Murphy, what's the House asking the Senate to accept here? And what members of the Senate are going to be very happy with this language?
I don't know of anybody that's not going to be happy, Mr. Chairman. As I read this, it looks like this is asking that if there is money available, that a few of these roads that fit into this category get fixed. And one of those roads that fits into this category is Highway 14. That's one of the most dangerous stretches of road any place in the United States.
So we got Highway 14 and what other?
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't say that in there. It's Highway 14 would fit under this, under these parameters, but it doesn't name any roads.
But, I know that, but I think the House had something in mind.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, it's like this. District 7 has been under a terrible crunch for the longest time. They They don't have enough money to provide maintenance on their roads, let alone fix roads like Highway 14 or some of those other roads out there in southwestern Minnesota. And so if they're going to get the money, we're going to demand that a couple of these roads that fit under these parameters get fixed. I mean, I think that's a responsible thing to do. We do that in our bill with the bridge program. We're going to give MnDOT $600 million to leverage against other monies that they can get to fix the $1 billion of deficient bridges that we have that just the state is responsible for. And we put parameters on there, and we say by 2018, that first year of bridges, we're going to guarantee the public that they're going to get fixed. They're either going to get replaced or fixed. And MnDOT helped us with the language in that bridge account that Representative Leader was good enough to put together. And we all feel very comfortable. I mean, the folks that work for the in the bridge department, Senator Dibble, myself, the House members that have been working on this, that we can give the public a guarantee that by 2018, if this bill passes, we're going to have all the state's bridges fixed, period. Those fracture-critical bridges that have a deficiency rating less than 50, we guarantee they're going to get fixed. And so that language kind of goes along those lines where if we're going to spend this money, if we're going to raise taxes, we're going to demand results. And I think that's what the public wants. And then the rest of the amendment on the back is one that Senator Dibble was more involved with than me, and I'll let him explain what that is. And it's on page 4 of the amendment.
Mr. Chair, that part of the amendment simply states that the counties that can become a part of the metropolitan transportation area by virtue of joining the Joint Powers Board and enacting, being a part of the enactment of the half-cent sales tax in the metropolitan area is confined to the 7-county metro area, the adjoining counties, so 9 additional counties that can opt in, that abut the Metropolitan Council area, as well as any counties that are part of the North Star Development Authority, so that would leap one county to Stearns County, so Stearns County could opt in for the purpose of, you know, assessing that tax and fully building out the North Star corridor to St. Cloud.
So the 7 counties are automatically in and the rest are opt-in?
The 7 counties, they do have to opt in.
They are part of the joint powers. The 7 automatically are or not?
No, Mr. Chair. Actually, all the counties that would become a part of the Joint Powers Board do have to take an affirmative step and opt in.
And Mr. Chairman, just like the Twins deal, the county board has to vote to opt in.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, perhaps, what's the status of the half-cent sales tax in rural counties? Could you quick go through that?
Yeah, we'll cover that when we cover the bill, but rural counties would be able to, that aren't a part of this metropolitan, can, if they so choose, can opt for a half-cent sales tax
so
for any transportation purpose, whatever.
So Mr. Chair, Senator, so with the passage, if this bill passes and becomes law, any county in the state with the passage of a referendum could institute a half-cent sales tax for transportation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes.
Okay, maybe when we get to that part of the bill, maybe we should make that clear for people. So.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole section there.
But that's pretty much the amendment, Mr. Chairman. Like I said, this puts it in line so that we're, except for that one small technical point, exactly the same as the House bill.
Members, any discussion on the A-19 amendment? Does anybody want to testify on the A-19 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Aye. Motion prevails. The A-19 is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senator Dibble and myself and the rest of the transportation staff have been working pretty hard to try to come to some resolution with this bill, Mr. Chairman, and we appreciate the opportunity to come in front of the Tax Committee and tell you exactly why we need this bill, what's in the bill, and what we hope to accomplish with this bill. First of all, Mr. Chairman, there's a report out from Growth and Justice, and you know, it's a nonpartisan group, and it and once again, this is fairly indicative of all the reports that have been filed by different nonpartisan groups. But Growth and Justice, the headline on their paper says state highway investment is a cumulative $13.89 billion under the 1986 level. So because of inflation and several other things, like when we cut the TAB fees under the Ventura administration, we're now almost $14 billion behind where we were at in 1986 dollars. I've got this report if anybody wants to read it. I think everybody heard the news from the legislative auditor's report saying that, you know, we were upside down on how we fund. And the legislative auditor also said that if things remain the same, we're in dire straits because we won't be able to maintain our roads. We have exhausted our ability to maintain our roads. The other thing that we're hoping to do with this bill, and this is a study from the University of Minnesota, Professor Barry Ryan from the Economics Department did this study, and it shows that in the state of Minnesota, about 24% of the overall local spending, your property taxes, are, you know, and this is on an average across the state because some are much higher than this. Depends on what township you're in. But it says that 24% of all the local property taxes are going for roads. And, you know, it says it pretty clear right there. That's 13% higher than the national average. 13% higher than the national average. So what we've done in our state by neglecting our responsibility as state legislators and governors is to advocate to the local jurisdictions our responsibility of building roads. And it is our responsibility. And I think it's time that we quit relying so much on the property taxes to pay for roads, health care, education, all of those things that we've mandated as being a public service the state should be paying for, not the local taxpayers. Mr. Chairman, so that's why we're there. We're clearly well underfunded in transportation. Everybody knows that. All you have to do is drive, you know, two blocks in either direction from the Capitol to find roads where you will break tie rod ends and dent rims and blow out tires. So, Mr. Chairman, with the bill, page one and page two just shows where the appropriations are at. Some of those numbers change now, committee members, with the adoption of that amendment. Page three just shows some of the language around the North Star Corridor, the Port Development Assistance Fund, state roads, highway debt service, how much money we pay for debt service. On the next page is the $54 million that's going to be going to the county state aids, the $14.5 million that goes to municipal street aids. Page five is the public safety section of the bill where we appropriate money to help fund the state patrol. On the next page, there's a line for the 40 additional state highway patrol persons that we're seeking. You know, Mr. Chairman, once again, I can't say enough good things about the troopers in our state. According to national rankings, we have fewer troopers on the road than most any other state, according to vehicle miles and to licensed drivers out there. Yet our state patrol is held in very high regard according to national standards. Further down the page, it talks about the spending authority starting on lines 20. This is the increase in spending authority due to the money that the federal government sent to us for the collapse of the I-35W bridge. On line 29, and this is a section that we're trying to put into law so that we can ask the University of Minnesota, their Center for Transportation Studies, to give us a report back about this value capture idea, which says that if we build, if we expand service on a highway, or we build a new light rail line or heavy rail, that we look at what the increase in value of the property is, and what that might mean to capture that increase of taxing, because the valuation is going to go up, there's going to be a higher tax on that property. Possibly capturing that and using it to provide maintenance or other building on that corridor. On page. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I was just whispered in my ear that I might be—I might have a slightly different page than you guys do, because I'm working off the bill that I marked up before the last committee, and I haven't actually engrossed it myself.
Maybe we can get Senator Murphy a copy of what the committee has, because I'm on page 6, line 13, with the University of Minnesota work.
All right, Ms. Bierzowski gave me a copy without all my notes on it here, so this is okay. Page 7. Okay, page 7 is where we start with some of our bond appropriations. In the original bill, we had $2.2 billion worth of bonds to be spent, and we had a schedule for it. We've reduced that appropriation down to 1.8. I think what follows on the next pages 8 and 9, it discusses the bridge account that we've put together and kind of how that is supposed to work. Well, at least the money is in that section right there. Page 9, it talks about some of the appropriations that we make out of this. Great River Road project, the Urban Partnership project. There's also the Mankato District Headquarters building. This is the last time, hopefully, that we have to deal with that Mankato building. There's also money in here for the Chaska truck station. This is a partnership with the county out that way. There's money in here for the Rochester and Maple Grove truck stations to do some rehabilitation. And then we've got some GO bonds in here for local bridge replacement rehabilitation. Senator Langseth was good enough to let us carry that $50 million for that program, as well as on the next page, the $10 million of GO bonds for the local road improvement program. You go further down the page, and then there's more money in here for the urban partnership agreement. This goes directly to the Metropolitan Council to cover their expenses. Then there's also money on line 24 of this bill, and this is for the exterior of the MnDOT headquarters across the street here on John Ireland that is falling apart.
Senator Murphy, Senator Langseth, does this $60 million of GO bonds affect your bonding capacity?
Mr. Chair, yes, it drops us down by $50 million. So
it drops your bill.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any difference in the long run, but as we shifted, we actually shifted $60 million over with, and so it'll drop ours down to $905 million.
Okay, thank you. Senator Murphy, I'm sorry, continue.
No, that's okay. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I probably should mention Representative Bernie Leader, who was a county engineer, went over the total list of requests for local bridges, and he found out there were 48.5 million that were structurally deficient, and the 50 million covers all of those that were structurally deficient. And in the past, we've been in that $50 to $55 million range, and that did allow us to reduce the number of deficient bridges in the state. And this really goes after those that are very crucial and covers that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that Senator Langseth brought that point up. Representative Leader walked through all of the documentation from MnDOT. You know, he is an engineer. He was a county engineer before either you or I were born. And he added up all of the deficient bridges, both on the state trunk highway system and on our either municipal system or county state aid system. And the numbers were staggering. But what he did was then he went through and he broke it down into different categories. Structurally deficient bridges, we know, that have a rating of 50 or less are absolutely the targets that we want to aim at. And he added all those up. Senator Langseth is right. It looks like the $50 million is going to be enough to cover that. Plus, that $50 million is also going to help to leverage other monies so that this money is going to be at the local level is actually going to do more work than just $50 million. You know, it's a good program, both what Representative Leader has done with the local bridge replacement rehabilitation program and with the state trunk highway bridges. Once again, members, with this bill, you know, we're going to be able to guarantee the public results. And, you know, Senator Sieben sits in a – represents a district that has one of the worst culprits when it comes to bridges, and that's the Hastings Bridge. And she'll be able to go home and say that she can guarantee that bridge is going to get fixed, which is a good deal. Page 11, we start down at the bottom. You talk about the bond sale expenses, and that carries on to the next page. page 12 is where Article 3 starts, and this is the highway user taxes, and it just goes through, you know, the first section here is basically starts over on page 13, and this is the new schedule for the license tab fees. Once again, if you don't trade your vehicle or go out and buy a brand new vehicle, you're not going to get put on this schedule. You're not going to see an increase. But if you're like the majority of families and trade your cars in between 5 and 10 years old, and like the majority of families, and you go out and buy another car that's between 5 and 10 years old, the amount of increase that you're going to pay is going to be negligible. Now, if you go buy a brand new vehicle, the amount that you're going to pay is going to be substantially more because we took the caps off. And this doesn't go all the way back to where we were at before Ventura administration cut these tabs, but we go a little better than halfway back. And the reason why we do that, members, quite frankly, is that this is the one fund of money that has traditionally grown. Now, our gas tax revenues are flat to barely breathing, and so are some of the other funds. This one is healthy. And it continues to grow, and that's why we touched it. It's a pretty good compromise in getting rid of the index. So,
Senator Murphy, is there any cap, or is the first year actually can it be $700?
Mr. Chairman, the $700.
Depending on what you buy.
Kind of vehicle would that be? Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bierzowski, there never was a cap on the first year on a brand-new vehicle. The cap was on the second year, and that was $189, and we removed that cap.
Did we remove the second-year cap?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langseth,
to give a little history on this, I was in Senator Murphy's shoes, I don't know, 20 years ago or so. And I was about his age then, I think. But what I did at that time, the average automobile was just $10,500. And what we did was we said that it would just drop 10% every 2 years for the first 6 years. Well, then as the cost of the automobiles went from 10.5 up to over 20, people started complaining an awful lot because they were paying almost as much for 6 years as they were for a new car. And I put in a bill at that time that does exactly what this does, drop 10% every year. Well, then, as you remember, Ventura, he got his sort of one-third, 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 and he put in place what we've got now, which is ridiculous. Should an $80,000 car pay $99 the third year? So he overdid it. And this is going back to where I wanted to go several years ago because I'd actually put in a bill that just dropped to 10% every year. So I think this is the way to go, and I think it's very good policy. They'll see a drop every year. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as people see it dropping every year, why they're okay with it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sandra.
Just, I don't know if you can ballpark this one or not, Senator Murphy, but I don't know what a new car costs. Let's just say a $30,000 car. What do you think a plate would be on a new $30,000 car?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Boyd tells me $400.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it's 1.25% of value. I think they're off by $25. It's $375.
Mr. Chair,
Senator said
maybe just to follow up on it. So I'm under. So that would be the new plate, new car. At the end of at then subsequently each year it would drop 10%. So it would be 360 and so on and so forth.
Mr. Chairman, okay. Senator Sinjum, you're correct. It goes down 10% every year.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair, the 1.25% stays the same. It's except for that cap removal. It'll the 1.25% is what we've had.
Okay.
But, Senator Murphy, current vehicles with current tabs, unless they change ownership, won't change?
Correct.
And if a vehicle, let's say I bought a 2007 pickup and I currently own that, and if I sell that to somebody new, does that put it into the new rate structure when it changes ownership?
You're correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, if now I park next to Senator Marty every morning, and Senator Marty's been driving the same Saturn for, I want to say, about
15, 17 years.
Pardon?
15 years.
15 years. Okay, I was going to say since I started, but I might be off a year or two. And I think that Senator Marty's probably going to continue to drive that vehicle for quite a while, much like I'm going to continue to drive my Saturn for quite a while. We're not going to see anything but continued decrease. Well, mine's already at the bottom, I believe Senator Marty's is too, so we're not going any place. And that's where most families are at in middle-class Minnesota. I mean, they're just, people have 5, 8, 10-year-old vehicles, and they just pay to maintain them and keep driving them until, you cart it off to the junkyard, basically. I mean, Senator Langseth has had vehicles that have had 300,000 miles on them and running like tops, and that's the way most families are doing anymore. Nobody can afford the $45,000 brand new vehicle. I mean, it doesn't happen all that often.
So. Senator Langseth, is that true?
That is true, and I really respect the fact that you didn't refer to it as an old junker because you've done that before, and I and I have very sensitive feelings. So, Mr. Chair, does the low end stay at 35? Or is it, there's some increase, it stays there. So my four vehicles, I'm still going to pay $35 for all of them. Three of them are over 200,000 miles. But.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, you're very frugal.
No wonder we have problems in Detroit.
Well, they're building them too good, Mr. Chairman. They'll last forever if you just take care of them a little bit. It's kind of like our roads. You know, they're designed to last 50 years. If you take care of them a little bit, they last 50 years. Bridges normally last 70, 80, 90, 100 years, but you got to take care of them. And that's what this is all about. You know, it's providing the maintenance. You wouldn't build a house and then not put money away every month to do a little touch-up painting here or put a new roof on every now and again. I mean, it just, so why do we want to build stuff and then not take care of it? It just makes no sense. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, back to the bill. Let's see, on page 14, section 2 is the low-income motor fuels tax credit. It provides a $25 rebate to any individual or married couple. And we're talking for this credit, the lowest of the lowest income earners are in this category, Mr. Chairman. And this was an attempt to, like many other sections in the bill, to reach out to the governor and other groups that have asked that we do this. It spends about $45 million a year. And whether or not that group of taxpayers actually uses that much fuel every year, I would highly doubt it, but we needed this provision in the bill to gain votes.
Well, Senator Murphy, this does take some of the regressivity out of the gas tax, of course, depending on how much gas an individual buys. But, Council, can you tell us what is the lowest rate bracket we have? I mean, at what income level does this credit not available?
Mr. Chair, for married joint filers, the index for inflation amount, which already is currently in statute, is about $31,000 for this year. For single filers, it would be approximately half of that.
And is this credit?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear that last number.
Yeah. So for 2009, it is in the revenue estimate, page 2. For 2009, that bracket for married joint filers would be $32,720. For head of household, it would be $27,560.
$22,390
for single filers.
And, Council, does that, when a person, individual, files their income tax, will that credit be on the form? I mean, are we adding a line, or what are we doing on the income tax?
Mr. Chair, presumably the Department of Revenue would add a line to reflect that, just as it does with all the other credits.
Is the 11-inch piece of paper still big enough? We'll ask Revenue later.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogomar.
Senator Murphy, I think you said the income tax credit was $45 million. Is it different than the fiscal note says it's 29.8 or 37?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogomiller, I'm sorry, the number that I gave you, the 46, was we're using the lease tax money to provide for this credit, and that's about $46 million. What you have on the spreadsheet is correct. It's 20-some million dollars for this credit, which leaves about $15-16 million going to do actual Greater Minnesota Transit. So it's just
okay, that's down here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it is roughly about $30 million a year in an income tax credit that's going back to slightly over a million filers.
Right.
Senator Skoy.
Other quick follow-up. The
redirection of the sales tax on motor vehicles, I'm trying to figure out how much that is. That comes out of the general fund debt. I'm just trying to get a sense of how big that number is.
Mm-hmm. this number?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so it starts off here and then goes to 13 and stays there for a few years.
Is that how you get to that number? The addition of the
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, for fiscal year 2011, it's $7.2 million going to the rural transit. The following year, it's $13 million. The following year, it's $16 million. And then it'll be pretty static at 16.
So I think the question is, are we capturing all the lease vehicle sales tax? Some of it's going to transit, and some of it's going to the income tax credit. We're capturing all the money? Mm-hmm. So that whatever the lease vehicle sales tax brings in.
The increase or the total?
I believe
Mr. Chair, It's going to be brought in under the same schedule that the larger motor vehicle sales tax schedule is coming in. It's phased in, 70, 80, 90, 100% over time, and ultimately 100% of the motor vehicle leased vehicle sales tax will be coming either for the tax credit or for these transit purposes.
Then I think, Mr. Chairman, so you add up
the distribution. There's three or four different places here. You can add those all on the head of the total number.
So it is all the hole in the general fund actually is all of the leased vehicle sales tax that we collect.
Right. Phased in, starting in 2011, 13.5, 2012, 16, and then 2013 is 20, and then that's pretty much the end there.
Plus the tax credit.
Plus what?
Plus the tax credit, which is...
We're paying the tax credit out of that vehicle leasing, Mr. Chairman.
So, Senator Murphy, in 2011, is the amount $44 million of the leased vehicle sales tax that we're spending in the bill?
Yeah, but, Mr. Chair, recall that in 2011, we're not taking all of the leased vehicle sales tax. It's still being ramped in.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
Portions of that are still going to the general fund.
So 44 is not the total amount, it's the percentage amount?
44 is what the leased vehicle sales tax raises. The numbers person is going to help us out a little bit here.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, the leasing tax in 2010-2011 is roughly $43, $44 million, but we're phasing it into transportation on the same schedule as MVEST is currently in law. So in 2010, we'll be taking 83.75% of that total and then taking the tax credit out of there, and the remainder will be about $7 million. And I apologize. This 10-year revenue sheet that you have was done before the new revenue estimate just came out, so they overestimated an earlier estimate. So the $13 million that you see in 2011 for the leasing sales tax is actually about $7
million. Okay.
The next year, it'll go up to about $13 million instead of the $16 million. And then every year thereafter will be roughly about $16 or $17 million just to leasing. And the remainder will go to the tax credit. So you're correct that the overall leasing total is about $44 million every year. We'll take about $16 million off the top for leasing when it's fully phased in, and the remainder will go to the tax credit.
Senator Pogemiller, okay. Everybody understand what we're doing here? Does Senator Cohen understand what we're doing?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's continue.
Mr. Chairman, the next section starts the gas tax discussion. We're moving the rate from 20 to 25 cents. Once again, we removed the indexing so that it's 5 cents, period. That's it. There's some other rate adjustments that are made here. Let's see, go down. Part's been ripped out. We already talked about that. Mr. Chairman, on page 18, section 2 starts. Page 18, article 4 is the local option sales tax. And I'll let Senator Dibble walk you through these next few pages of the bill.
Senator Murphy, on line 15.10, I see we're taxing E85 at a significantly less number, 17 and 3/4 cents instead of 25. If we're trying to promote the use of E85, isn't that a little counterproductive to our gas tax revenues? What's the rationale?
It's not out of line or anything. I mean, this is pretty much the percentage of, if you take 20 and then 25 and the percentage that is, that's about what 14.2 to 17.5 is and 11.4 to 14.25. Mr. Chairman, this is not out of line. The folks that are buying E85 or M85 are getting a heck of a good deal regardless.
I know they're getting a deal. That's my point. I mean, a mile down the road is a mile down the road, and why should it make a difference what kind of fuel we buy? I don't understand the rationale. I mean, I can see we've done that historically, but...
Yeah, that's right. This is 85%.
You sit on the transportation committee?
You still.
Well.
Let's go.
You're on, aren't you?
Mr. Chairman, this is the same thing we've done every year with the proposal. It's just a proportional increase that is proportional to the 20 to 25. But, Mr. Chairman, I don't agree with not having the indexing in the bill. I don't agree with having the low-income tax credit in the bill, and because it just chips away. We have a $24 billion problem over a 10-year construction cycle. This bill now only raises about $8 billion in that same 10-year construction cycle because of the winnowing away that we've done at the bill. We don't have the expansion of the Metro Sales Tax District in here, or I should say the transit tax. We've dumped the wheelage tax. We've dumped a lot of things out of this bill. I think the speaker counted them up, and there's been 12 jettisons of one thing or another or a reduction. And, if we're going to do this, we should at least do a decent job. I mean, I don't want to fool the public like we tried to fool them a few years back when they voted on the invest money. People were running around saying, "Hey, this is good stuff," and it was good stuff to get that money into the trunk highway fund. But then they were also trying to tell the public that this was going to take care of your transportation problems. It was $400 million of revenue to fix a $2 billion a year problem. You can't fix a $2 billion a year problem with $400 million. Now, on top of that $400, we're raising about $800 million a year with this bill. Now, you add the $4 into it, and we're at $1.2 billion, and it's still far short of the $2 billion that we need every year. So if we're going to do this, Mr. Chairman, I realize your committee is hesitant on raising taxes, and I understand that. Nobody wants to raise taxes on their constituents. I mean, it's probably the easiest way to get unelected. But I tell you what, I'm tired of picking up the paper every day and reading about all the bad things that happen on our roads. And I'm not just talking about the loss of life on our roads. I'm talking about the economic state of our state. I mean, we're in the tank. And a lot of the reason is because we've got a transportation system that's dilapidated. Now, every other major metropolitan area, every other state in the nation that has increased their spending on highways and transitways, their economies are moving ahead of ours clearly 2 full percentage points and sometimes as much as 4.5. Now, if we want to kick our economy in the seat of the pants and get it going a little bit, this is a good way of doing it, passing this bill. I don't think we need to chip away at any of the taxes that are in this bill. Like I said, nobody wants to raise taxes, but you know, when you get to the point where you have a report from the legislative auditor, you've got a report from the University of Minnesota, one from the Growth of Justice, and I've got a whole office full of other material like this from every other agency, from the NCSL, the federal government. I mean, you talk about it, and everyone points to the same thing, that in Minnesota, we're terribly underinvested in our transportation infrastructure, and if we don't turn it around, just like the legislative auditor said, you're not going to be able to maintain the roads that you have, period. Let's see. Took all that out. Mr. Chairman, we're back to Article 4, and I'll let Senator Dibble take over here for a little
Chair,
bit.
Chair, I have a handout if someone can come grab that and distribute it. And just to kind of set the stage a little bit, this is the hot off the press here, just a map of what might be possible if we pass this bill. It just illustrates some of the transit ways that are on the that have been developed, conceptualized by the Metropolitan Transit Ways Development Board and the Metropolitan Council that we might be able to get to build and operate by 2020, which would catch us up with other metropolitan areas around the country. Mr. Chair, I'm going to just run through this section. I have a slightly different style. I don't usually go through line by line or page by page, but I'll try to the extent I can. But I'll try to hit on all the points and all the concepts that are in Article 4. First of all, what this calls for is the establishment of a metropolitan transportation area. And with the amendment that was adopted earlier, the metropolitan transportation area will be the 7-county metro area plus the adjoining counties, the 9 that surround that, plus Stearns County, which gets you up to St. Cloud for the purpose of developing the North Star corridor. Metropolitan transportation area is established when those county boards adopt the half-cent sales tax and opt into the joint powers. The terms and conditions of entering into that joint powers are left up to those counties so that they can figure out for themselves whether or not there should be weighted voting, how counties get in, how counties get out, if counties are going to be getting out at some point along the
That's
way, how you make sure that the financial obligations that they've entered into are satisfied prior to eliminating the collection of the sales tax in their area. We also established that any county getting in that raises 3% or less of the total sales tax for the entire metropolitan transportation area is going to receive at least that much back in benefit in terms of transportation facilities so that those counties know that if they get in, they're going to receive the kind of benefit that, you know, that reflects the effort and sales tax that they put forth. It calls for the establishment of a GEARS board. A GEARS board would consist of city officials, county officials, as well as a representation from the Metropolitan Council Transportation Committee Chair. I should back up 1 second and mention that the joint powers body that consists of county commissioners that are part of the Metropolitan Transportation Area that are part of that joint powers board would also have a seat, a voting seat, for the chair of the Metropolitan Council. Also, they allow the establishment of a technical committee that would typically be made up of engineering and other kinds of staff at the local level to help them with some of the technical advice that they're going to need. So this joint powers board would be tasked with helping prioritize and direct where the money raised would go, what it would be spent for. And just very quickly, a brief description: the half-cent sales tax would be reserved 50% for transit purposes, operating and capital, 25% for roads of regional significance, and then there's a 25% that's reserved for flexible purposes to respond to varying needs. It could go to roads, it could go to transit, or some mix therein. And then up to 1.25%, up to, not a minimum, but up to, could be used for pedestrian and bikeway purposes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Dibble, if a county not listed wanted to be part of this, and then they would become part of the joint powers board, is there any relationship there then to need to become part of the Metropolitan Council if they're not, or is that completely separate from all of this?
Is it going to be charged?
Mr. Chair, that would be separate.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not drawing people into the Metropolitan Council jurisdiction.
Right, but this happens.
It's an important point to remember because I think there's some concern about that. And it's not a way that the Met Council can cast its net any wider. However, I will say the Met Council does, we did at their request and through some serious heart-to-heart conversation, the Met Council requested and we accommodate in the bill their ability to determine that the grants, the expenditures that are made from these sources within the Metropolitan Council jurisdictions area are consistent with the transit portion of the adopted Metropolitan Council's transportation plan. So they make that determination. Now, if the Joint Powers Board disagrees strenuously with that determination, then we also provide for a process of working out that difference of opinion. But that was important for the Metropolitan Council, and we recognize they embody, they hold the official transit plan for the metropolitan area. So that was an important recognition. Moving along, Mr. Chair, as you may be aware, there's a significant deficiency forecasted. MVESTA proceeds very volatile; they're down quite a bit. All the other forecasting that's been done, Metropolitan Council is looking at a very significant deficiency in their coming fiscal year budget. So the first 30 or so some million dollars that are raised by this sales tax are going to go directly to the Metropolitan Council in the coming fiscal year to make the Metropolitan Council whole. And that relieves a great deal of pressure and a great deal of general fund exposure in this bill. It'll just simply come from that sales tax that we raise. So we can create more problems for ourselves in other parts of the budget that we deal with in other committees. There's authorization to sell bonds. This sales tax, this half-cent sales tax, half of it would sunset in 2028 under this scenario, so that it would drop down to a quarter cent. And if, in fact, the Joint Powers Board does not get its act together by October of this year, this whole section expires and we're left with nothing. So it's a great deal of motivation to the Joint Powers Board to get their act together, form the Joint Powers Agreement, and enact this half-cent sales tax. I'll also jump ahead, Mr. Chair, to the end of the bill that deals with some other transit provisions. At the end of this section is the issue that Senator Scoyer raised. Counties in greater Minnesota that aren't adjacent to the metropolitan transportation area or beyond can, on their own volition, raise a half cent sales tax. They can go for any transportation purpose that they see fit and pay for that. I think they have to identify a specific, you know, they have to have a specific plan, pay for it, and then I think the sales tax would then go away unless they have identified further uses for that. We do, you know, a few years ago when Hiawatha Light Rail was coming online and the state's commitments through the general fund had evaporated to transit operating the metropolitan area. Remember in 2001 we took transit operating off of the metro-wide sales tax. We were going to replace that with general fund sources and motor vehicle sales tax. That diminished, yet we had the full funding grant agreement. We had to provide for operating of the Hiawatha Light Rail. And so magically overnight, under the cover of darkness, we required the Hennepin County property taxpayers to pay 50% of the operating of that line. And now any other rail line that goes in place, that's a kind of a standing de facto policy. So Central Corridor, 50% operating is going to be from Hennepin County, Ramsey County property taxpayer, North Star Corridor, 50% coming from all the counties that line touches. Sales tax in this bill is sufficient to provide for the operating of those transit ways, and so that practice will be stopped. Additionally, you know, counties go to some effort on their property tax to assist with the capital expenditures, and that's fine, that's appropriate, but we cap that out at 10%. This does continue to allow counties to pay for on their own the bus demonstrations that we've seen. For example, we had a busway that showed that the North Star Corridor would be very viable, and counties want to continue to establish those commuter bus connections into the core. They can continue to provide for those demonstration bus service that might then precede bus rapid transit or some other sort of transit facility. And then there's a great idea at the very end of the bill. Salt Lake City, other metropolitan areas that have kind of gotten their act together, are raising sufficient revenue to do capital and operating for their transitway needs, are packaging together multiple lines. Denver is doing multiple lines at once. Salt Lake City is doing multiple lines. So it directs the Met Council to go to the FTA, package up a few of these lines, negotiate for them all at once for the federal match that would come to Minnesota to get those going. And that's
Mr. Chairman.
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, this is primarily a tax committee, and you know I and lots of others think the sales tax is very unfair. I'm really disappointed we continue to push this. Now, if this goes through and the constitutional amendment, I think in suburban communities it's up to 7 3/8 cents, and in the core cities would be like 7 7/8 cents sales tax. I realize the gas tax is regressive too, but at least the gas tax has one, a social good of reducing consumption environmentally that does help, and it's tied to what it's doing. I just wonder why we keep using sales tax to fund this. I mean, you mentioned the other one's property tax, so it's, I'm glad you got a little provision for Greater Minnesota, but you know, like I do from the Poverty Commission, how much we're hearing about transit needs in Greater Minnesota, too. I just disappointed. I don't know what else to say about it, but the sales tax is a very unfair way to fund it. I couldn't be stronger in belief we have to put more money into transit. I just wish we weren't doing it this way. I don't know if others share that concern, but it's a very regressive way to pay for this and has no connection with it, and I think the state should be funding transit in Greater Minnesota and here, and I realize political realities on that, but this is such a regressive way to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeBull.
A couple of points. I actually agree in great measure with Senator Marty. I think what has bogged us down for 20 years is the idea that you know, the whole state should pay for transportation that has a state benefit, even if that seems to, you know, there's no doubt that state roads benefit from transit in the metropolitan area, because it takes, you know, for example, if we get bus rapid transit up I-35W, that's going to have the equivalent of 2.5 lanes of traffic. Well, if we're going to build two and a half more lanes on I-35, that's something that we're going to share as a state. Instead, we're going to build bus rapid transit, going to have just a ton of people, tens of thousands of people using it every day. The metropolitan area is going to pay the full freight on that. And so there's this philosophical discussion about, you know, that should be then shared statewide, just like if we were to expand 35. I concede that point, and I agree this is not perfect. If I had my druthers, we'd do this differently. But here we are 20 years later, and we're looking for solutions. And so we only need look as far as, you know, 24 plus other metropolitan areas that have done this, and it works. The only source of funds that actually can you know, have the heft and pay the freight. We've looked at a lot of other sources. They just don't even come close, to raising what's needed to do what we need to do, what we've identified we need to do, other than the sales tax. And folks should also remember that there is significant property tax benefit that comes in this whole bill. Senator Murphy showed, you know, the benefit on that chart. But also within the sales tax, when we do transit on the sales tax, there's, you know, the relief of the direct operating subsidy that county property taxpayers don't have to go to. We have we still raise a little bit of about, you know, 30-some million dollars a year on metro-wide, a subset of the metro for capital for transit. That's the transit taxing district. Now, it's a subset of the metropolitan area, but... and there's a big discussion about that. We took it out of the bill because it's controversial. You know, we should have the whole metro area paying that. But we could conceivably not have to collect that property tax for capital for transit in the metropolitan area because the sales tax will be sufficient to do the task. So there'll be property tax potentially coming from there.
Senator Dibble, I would be remiss if I didn't share Senator Marty's concerns about the regressive nature of the sales tax and the cumulative impact this session is likely to have on low-income people. But are there any transit jurisdictions around the country that use an income tax surcharge of some kind to fund stuff like this? I know you know as much about this as anybody, or does everybody use the sales tax?
There may be one or two, Mr. Chair. I'm not aware of them specifically, but almost everyone uses the sales tax.
Senator Ortman.
And Senators, actually, it's impressive. Your bill is impressive. I mean, it starts to address the problem. I'm more than disappointed at the fact that the Department of Transportation has not been at the table to work with you. And that means that we are trying to determine statewide policy without the Department of Transportation. And that leaves 201 people here to try and participate and make a better bill. And so I would ask you to consider a change in the transit tax, if you will. We'll call it the transit tax. Right now, the way it's set up in your bill, part of it can go to local roads and bridges, this half-cent sales tax. And I think that it would be more transparent, clearer, if it were a quarter-cent sales tax and it were dedicated solely to transit. And I'm wondering if you would be hopefully supportive of that. I know the Chamber of Commerce supports that. I think it's clearer. It's less of a burden. It's less of a real challenge for those that are affected by inflation right now, those that are struggling in our economy. I worry about all these sales taxes as well, the elderly, the poor, the unemployed. You know, they're going to have to pay more. So on that, I think it would be an improvement if you could limit the sales tax to the quarter percent. And I have asked our council if she could prepare an amendment to do that. And then on page, let's see if I can find it. I think it's subdivision 6 on page 21 to change the allocation of grants so that under subparagraph A1, A sub 1, it would read no less than 100% for transit for the following purposes. And then that subdivision 6A would end after sub 4, little 4, operating assistance for transit ways, period, and then take out
the rest, the up to 25% for construction of trunk highways and up to 25% for planning studies and other things. If it were solely dedicated to that purpose of transit, I think that that would be a clearer, again, more transparent way of funding transit. And I think that you would gain a lot more support for it. And I would offer that as an amendment. I think Senate Council is prepared to do that, well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Upman, once we get through the bill, maybe we'll consider amendments.
All right. Then, Mr. Chair, could I ask another question that's related? The senators, the sales tax for the metro area, that 0.5% or 0.25%, it will sunset in 2028. Does the greater Minnesota sales tax also sunset or not? And would you be amenable to making that sunset in the same way? And then I guess the other concern I had about that greater Minnesota sales tax is the fact that it also is for all transportation projects, transit and transportation. And I think that it was Senator Marty who just said that outstate transit is an issue. I hope that you would give more thought to that. But I'm not as concerned about that in greater Minnesota as I am in the Twin Cities, making sure that sales tax is dedicated solely to transit.
Senator Ortman, I think if you look on page 24, and Council, correct me if I'm wrong, but on 24.6 and 7, it indicates that local tax will terminate after the project or improvement has been completed. Am I reading that right, Council?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The Greater Minnesota sales tax is set up to only deal with one project at a time. And when those costs have been reached, the tax will terminate under this provision.
Can you say the page number again?
24, Senator Ortman.
And which line?
It's lines 6 and 7.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Squay.
Thank you. Along Senator Ortman's line, though, perhaps the authority should sunset.
It's just me.
Perhaps the authority issued the sales tax should sunset.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ortman.
Senator Squay, then would they have to put together a whole other agreement in order to fund a project using the sales tax?
Well, Mr. Chair, the way I'm reading this is all of these counties or any collection of counties that does a joint powers board has the authority to impose the 0.5-cent sales tax with a referendum. And when the project that they're proposing is paid for, then the sales tax goes away. But they will have the authority to impose this sales tax on and on and on and on and on forever for any project unless we sunset the authority at some time. And so perhaps we should consider a sunsetting of the authority to impose the tax at the same time that the state one does or along those lines.
Senator Dibble, I don't believe the tax sunsets in the metropolitan area. It just goes down from 0.5 to 0.25, mm-hmm. correct, in 2028? So it doesn't, Senator Scoy, it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away.
It just is reduced in 2028. Is that the right?
Correct.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, if we take it back to 0.25%, we could at least consider a sunset. I think that if you're trying to build this, however, you wouldn't want that tax to sunset because you're going to need to maintain this and continue to construct it. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, that's correct. We need 0.25 cent minimum to operate a complete build-out of a system. And, I mean, those are numbers straight from the Met Council. So, and I, you know, Senator Ortman, I appreciate you bringing some of these ideas to the table. First of all, I do want to say that we did work with MnDOT, and I do believe that our bridge program that's in this bill is a direct result of
working with Mr. Dorgan's staff to make sure that what we have in the bill is workable for MnDOT. They're very excited about getting this money that's in the bill to rectify a lot of the deficient bridges in our state. And so we did work with MnDOT. We worked with MnDOT on and have on several points of the bill. I know that most of the time when there's an issue with what authors are carrying, Ms. Parker is no stranger to our office from MnDOT, and she comes and lets us know when there's a little hiccup in our bill, and so we normally make those allowances. But we have worked with MnDOT, and I believe this is a strong bill. And to Senator Scoy, I would hate to say that the authority for rural counties would go away in 2024 or 2030. Just knowing that we have a lot of issues in greater Minnesota that are unidentified. The mayor was in, I believe, yesterday from Crookston talking about the flood, and I happened to meet him down in the hallway talking about the flood and some of the related damage, and some of that is transportation infrastructure. It happened in my district and Senator Robe's district this past fall with the floods that were in southeastern Minnesota. A lot of transportation infrastructure got washed away, and when locals have to come up with a match and they don't have match money, well then stuff doesn't get fixed sometimes. Under this scenario, things are getting fixed. But if those local jurisdictions had a way of identifying a project and going out to the voters, whether it was in 2020 or 2050, and getting approval to replace a bridge, for example. Granted, the state owns most of the high buck bridges, but there are a few county bridges out here that are $50, $60, $70 million. And those local road authorities just don't have a way of meeting their match or paying for it. And this would, if we just left it on, once again, the voters have to approve all of this. When I chaired the Sales and Income Tax Division of your committee, Mr. Chairman, that was one thing that we always demanded. We worked with Senator Kiskaden on this, is when we authorize these local jurisdictions to increase their sales tax, they have to have an identified purpose, and it has to go away, and there has to be a referendum. And that's why we tried to mirror that, knowing that this is the way that we've normally done these local sales tax options in the past. So I'd hate to say for transportation purposes that this is going to go away anytime soon. Once again, some of the problems that are in greater Minnesota haven't been identified and may not for 10 or 20 years. So,
well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy, is there a reason on line 23.31 that we give those local pieces of government no flexibility? We really tell them the only thing they can raise is a half a percent. Why wouldn't we say up to a half in the event a county or a joint powers didn't need a half? But we tell them they have to be at a half, I think, on line 23.31. Was there any discussion about, oftentimes when we do local sales taxes here, we give them an option up to something, and they're authorized up to a penny, and they may, many of them go with that, have historically gone with a half a percent.
Mr.
Was
Chairman,
there any discussion about that?
I'm not sure if Senator Dibble has had discussions about this, but I have with several people. Most of these counties that we're talking about, most of these local jurisdictions that we're talking about, as I said earlier, if it's a county that has a bridge that is, $50 million, they could probably use more than half a cent. What we were thinking here is that if you do a half a cent and the road project costs $12 or $14 million, you're probably only going to have that tax on for about 3 or 4 years. The money would be acquired, the project would be paid for to go away. And so we were looking at trying to bring it up, get the project done, move it along. that, and we also wanted some consistency between, you know, greater Minnesota and the metropolitan half cent, so that, you know, greater Minnesota didn't feel shunned.
But in the future, the metropolitan tax is going to be at a quarter, and the rural will still only have the option of having a half. They won't have an option to have a quarter in the future. Mm-hmm. Senator Squay.
Mr. Chairman, it's an interesting idea. I'd kind of like to leave it just the way it is.
Senator Squay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Murphy. One of the issues, besides the regressive nature of sales taxes that Senator Marty has brought up that we struggle with, is there are communities that don't have a large base of business activity to tax. And so what are those communities going to do for funding for these type of projects? And, you know, I can see if you're a regional center where you've got, you know, some shopping malls and downtown, that you're going to do fine in getting funding for your project. But, you know, we've had communities come for a local sales tax option that are, you know, smaller and really don't have that activity. You know, we've always kind of struggled with what we're going to do with regard to those. And so that's kind of why I was thinking that, you know, we should put some end point to this so that we can reconsider it. And, you know, as it is now, it would go on and on forever. And I think for a lot of cities, it'll work just fine. But, you know, Crookston has been brought up today. You know, Crookston was in here last year asking for authority to do a half-cent sales tax. Well, you know, to be honest, when we looked at, you know, what was going on in Crookston, it was a tough, wasn't a real good viable option. So we did some other stuff for them, you know, through the AIDS program and are trying to help them along. But I'm a little concerned about leaving this just go on and on and on and on forever. And, you know, maybe at some point the legislature ought to take a look at how it's working. And if we don't put some kind of end date in, we very likely won't, and it'll just be there. So that's, you know, I'm not going to make any amendments today or anything, but I want to tell you why I'm expressing my concern on that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
If he's continuing on the same subject.
Mr. Chair, I do like the up to 0.5%. I'll certainly defer to the author as to what we do today, but really think they should take a look at having some flexibility there. I really do think that there's going to be a number of counties that aren't going to do it at all, but I think there's some that would think 0.5% is a little too much of a bite and probably more than they need. So at some time in the future, I think we should take a look at allowing flexibility.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, on a slightly different point, I'm not going to dwell on this because it's tax committee here, but just wanted to express concern that, and Senator Dibble and I have had some disagreements over this in the past, but like with the Central Corridor, when Lake Street was reconstructed, all these small businesses are really put under for several years. A lot of them go out of business. I think the Central Corridor have the same concern about that because it's not, if it was faster and a more efficient way to transport people, it'd be one thing. But when you can do express buses, you can do other ways of moving people faster, and you can move people much less expensively other ways. I guess I see all the gaps in our transit system, and, you know, you could put in all these express bus routes, rush line everywhere. You could do those now very quickly for a fraction of the cost, and you wouldn't have the disruption. I guess I think my community, I'm only 15, 20 minutes from the Capitol. I can't take transit of any kind. It just take me 2 hours plus. And saying we're going to put all that money into that line when it doesn't really serve the people in that neighborhood particularly well, I guess I would just wish that the transit money was going to be spent in a way that would increase the overall ridership. And I think, again, if light rail was environmentally better than, I mean, clean fuel buses, I'd picture being better than either other option. But I'm just not seeing the benefits environmentally or speed-wise or congestion-wise. And financially, it's so much more expensive. I just wish that, I mean, I know those decisions aren't being made here.
Well, Mr. Chair.
We're putting the money in for it, but I just wanted to raise that concern.
Senator Dibble.
A couple of points. One is, Senator Marty, I will bring to your office or bring to you on the floor an analysis that shows that express bus service is no less expensive. The capital costs of building express bus service is no less expensive than building light rail, and the benefits are far less than building light rail. I think Central Corridor does serve, when it's supported by local bus service, in a way that makes sense, and I think there's been a lot of very intensive discussion with the local community. How do we build light rail along that line so it serves the neighborhoods and it serves the folks in between each of those light rail stops? And I think those have been very fruitful and very beneficial discussions. The benefits from light rail are magnified by the number of folks who use light rail. Many, many more people will use light rail than will ever use buses. And the ability to influence development and redevelopment and reuse of our existing infrastructure so that we have the kind of a variety of housing opportunities, service opportunities, employment opportunities, educational, et cetera, so that folks can take advantage of transit and take advantage of the development opportunities so that we can build walkable districts around those transit nodes. And so, in summary, there is this great mythology out there that somehow express bus service is so much less expensive. That's just simply not true. And I can show you all the research that supports that statement. And the benefits are much, much greater with investment in rail systems that are supported by a strong local bus service.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman, and it's not just Senator Dibble saying that or me backing him up. I mean, Mr. Bell, the chair of the Metropolitan Council, will say the same thing. Mr. McLaughlin, Commissioner Hinton, County Commissioner, that's been involved in a lot of this transit discussion since its inception. You know, Commissioner Peterson from Washington County, they'll all tell you the same thing. And these are experts, as well as Senator Dibble, in my opinion, in the area of transit and transit operations. And light rail is beneficial, and people can throw darts at it all day long, but I think the success that we've had with the Hiawatha line proves that light rail in our state is a very popular and useful tool. And Senator Dibble is correct that when you use light rail in conjunction with heavy rail and then bus service, every other major metropolitan area that has a complete build-out like Senator Dibble's been talking about here, their transit systems work. I mean, it's as slick as grease. It's unbelievable. And the amount of ridership that they have compared to what we have today is substantially higher, even though every day in Minnesota we've got about 250,000 people that access our transit ways. We're going to add 1 million people to the state. Most of them are going to be in the metropolitan area in the next 10 years. We got to have a complete build-out because we can't afford to build enough roads to handle that kind of traffic.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Murphy, I think it's worth a try. I mean, I strongly support expanding transit. But I got to tell you, I mean, people are obsessed with their cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, the place I rent is up in White Bear Lake, and every morning I come down White Bear Avenue, I get on 36, and I get on 35, and I come in. And this morning, I saw something very odd. While I was sitting at the ramp meter on 36 to get on 35, somebody went by me in the carpool lane. I mean, there was about a dozen of us waiting, individuals mm-hmm. in our car, and somebody actually used the carpool lane. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm telling you, that is infrequent. It was so infrequent that it really caught my attention. So when I got up on 35, I thought, gosh, two people in a car. So all the way in from 36, I watched, and I couldn't find a car with two people in it. So I moved over into the Tomasoni's passing lane. And I couldn't, dangerous as it was, I couldn't resist watching the northbound traffic to see if there was, because I'm obviously going to see more cars there, if there was anybody in that northbound lane where there was two people in a car. I couldn't find one. Mm-hmm. And I finally got up to University where I was going to make the turn, and I saw two cars with two people in them. And I thought, no wonder we have congestion. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you how bad it is. I'm to blame. My wife and I drove in separate cars today. You know, I mean, but I mean, I'm hopeful that it works, because it sure would help those of us that drive cars, but we don't even carpool. Yeah. Sarah Dibble, can you comment on that? Is this the whole idea of spending all this money? I mean, I sure hope it works, but it does seem like a bit of an experiment.
Well, I think it's a tried and true and proven. You look at all the other metropolitan areas. I mean, people don't have a choice in the Twin Cities. I mean, gee, if you're coming to visit as a tourist, you better rent a car, because you're not getting around to see much of the cities if you don't have one. Because tourists aren't going to hop on a bus, because the buses go, who knows where they go, and they go really slow. You know, so that's just an illustration. You know, you parachute into the Twin Cities and you're stuck without a car. People don't have a choice. I think people are. I was just this morning. I was at a press conference out at the Southwest Transit 7 o'clock press conference. Just ungodly hour, but and that Southwest Transit park and ride out in Eden Prairie. I have my little props here. So I got there at 7, you know, grabbed a spot. It was already starting to fill up. Grabbed a spot, press conference. So I'm out of there at 7:30, and I could barely back my car out because of the torrent of cars that were just piling into that parking structure. I had to kind of keep inching out until finally, you know, they believed that I was actually trying to get out of the stall and stopped and let me out. So, you know, this is Eden Prairie. It's not the bastion of urban density. This is a place, this is suburbia, you know, American suburbia, classic, and people they jam up that facility and they fill up those buses. People want options and how to get around. I think there's no doubt people will make use. I think once we get bus rapid transit up I-35, there won't be enough room on those buses for folks who are coming up.
I really hope you're right.
And that's kind of the way it is. Most of those high-speed buses that are especially coming from the southwestern corner of the metropolitan area in the morning, they're full. I mean, we can get Mr. Shetton up here from the Met Council to talk about what kind of ridership that southwest corridor provides, but it's pretty high. I mean, it's really high. But, Mr. Chairman, you and I came into the legislature about the same time. When I was elected in 1992, there was 1.8 persons in every car during rush hour. Today, that number is 1.1 persons in every car. So you are correct. And a couple things have changed in that time. There's more cars on the road, okay, and there's fewer people that are actually carpooling. But, you know, in that 16-year period, park-and-ride structures that we've built all around the metropolitan area, we've expanded those, but we can't expand them fast enough because they're full. Senator Dibble's right. They're full. People come there and they park. They get on the bus. They ride with one of their neighbors, whatever it might be. But they're all full. And, you know, so I think we're doing a couple things right. And to make it a better system, we need this half-cent sales tax so that we can have a complete build-out and give people those options that Senator Dibble talks about. I mean, if not, we're going to be – our metropolitan area is going to be so choked with congestion that, you know, businesses are going to leave.
I agree. It's worth a try.
And I'll just say, too, about carpooling. You don't hear me talking a lot about it. Back during the big bus strike a few years ago, what is it, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I worked for a city council member, and we decided to gather up a few city employees and have a carpool. We found it to be an extremely difficult undertaking because everyone literally has to, you know, be ready at an exact time, and everyone has to leave work at an exact. No flexibility to coordinate busy lives and schedules, work lives that get complicated in a carpool. carpooling as a major component of your transportation solution, I don't think is very functional. In order for folks to take advantage of transportation alternatives, there has to be an advantage and a convenience factor that you get from what other metropolitan areas have done, and we just simply haven't done here.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I would like your cost analysis of bus, both bus rapid transit and regular bus, because I think a lot of your comments at the end are ones I strongly agree with, that if people want choice, they want the speed, they want to be able to get there, and when you can't get on any transit near you, that's why those park and ride lots fill up, because people can finally access it and somehow. So I think there's a big need for it. And Senator Murphy, I strongly agree with you. I mean, I think transit is, I'd put more into transit than this. I would just spend it differently. And I guess I would love to see some of Senator Dibble's numbers, but I don't want to belabor this point here in tax committee, but I do want to say that I hope that some more looks can be done at this, because there are lots of places where people want to ride, and I don't think they care whether it's, I mean, yes, a car, because it's your personal, then you can set the time. But in terms of otherwise with transit, fares have a big impact on it. We know that happens. And people want to get there fast. And if you have to take, if it's going to take me 40 minutes by light rail and 30 minutes by bus, I'm going to take the bus every time. And I frankly think 90-some percent of Minnesotans would say the same thing. But I don't want to belabor it. I would like to see your numbers on that, though.
Senator Ortman.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you. Senator Marty brings up a good point about fare boxes and the rates. You know, our fare box rates are some of the highest in the nation. And when people talk about the subsidization of transit, transit subsidized, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. But you would be surprised at the amount of subsidization for roads and bridges. And a lot of it is right here on your property taxes. Now, I just don't think that we need to hit the fare box again. And when people talk about tax fairness, let's actually look at who are the people that are accessing our transit systems. And, you know, these are working class people. And I don't think that we need to tap them again at the fare box, just as Senator Marty doesn't believe that we need to tap them with, or the chair, with a sales tax initiative. But if we're looking at either fare box and property taxes versus a sales tax, I think a sales tax is the least regressive of the three options. And, and Senator Dibble says, you know, all these other metropolitan areas that have a complete build-out, they've relied not exclusively on a sales tax initiative, but the vast majority of it is on a sales tax initiative.
Senator Marty, to that point.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, Senator Murphy, yes, I would hope that some of this money does go to reducing fare box rates, because that's one of the easiest ways to build ridership.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Marty's correct. I mean, after the bus strike, I believe we had an increase in the fare box, and I forget exactly what it was. But after that was over, and after a period of months of ramping the service back up, we had more ridership than before. So even with a higher fare box rate, but you're right. There's that point where if you go beyond it, you're going to lose. And we don't want to do that.
Senator Dibble?
And it's important also for Senator Marty and the committee to know that if this bill succeeds, part of the plan is to double bus service. That's part of the metropolitan area, Metropolitan Council's transit plan. Great deal of resources are freed up in the MVES that we're dedicating now 100% to transportation purposes, and that can be used solely for doubling bus operations.
Senator Orson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just opened a park and ride in Chanhassen along the 212 corridor, just a couple miles from where you were this morning. The place is packed every morning, and those buses, the Southwest buses from my area, are packed every single day, just packed. It's a great way to get into the cities. But to Senator Murphy's point, there are an awful lot of working-class people that pay for gas and drive their car to work, and so I don't think we should forget them in all of this. These gas tax increases are going to hit them very hard. And so I'm not sure where I'm at on the gas tax. The sales tax, I have a question for you, Senator Dibble. What is the justification for having a referendum on the sales tax in greater Minnesota but not in the metropolitan counties?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that's a statutory, first and foremost, it's a statutory constraint. When you have an area that's less than a million people, there's no way to be out of doing the referendum, and so that's a requirement of our laws. Secondly, we are way beyond the point. First of all, we're calling for leadership in this bill across the entire transportation system. We're not asking for a referendum for everything else that's in the bill, we can't continue to fiddle while we need to move ahead on this and pass the buck. I think there's some leadership, there's some accountability. County commissioners are going to be held to account. We're going to be held to account for taking this step. And finally, this is how we paid for the Twins Stadium. We did that absent a referendum. That was something we didn't have to have. Yet we saw fit to enact that tax by this means. This is much, much more vital to the future of our state. And so I think we can probably stand on equal footing with that action.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and in regards to what Senator Dibble just mentioned about this, and this does kind of mirror the deal that the Twins got. And now we did that because we felt that not only are the Twins a valuable state asset, but it was going to help provide jobs and some economic benefit. Now, that can be disputed on both sides. The thing that can't be disputed is that transportation and transit dollars are a benefit to the community, and all these other communities and states that have done an initiative like this have seen a great economic benefit, and it is measurable. It's not one of these things where a professional sports team, if they stay or go, a lot of people will disagree. Senator Marty and I disagree about the economic benefit of having professional sports teams. And so there's documented evidence on both sides of that issue, but there is no documented evidence on both sides of this issue when it comes to providing transportation options in a metropolitan area. I mean, the benefit greatly outweighs any negativity of a tax increase.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Murphy and Senator Dibble. I didn't expect, just before I spoke, the stadium, the blood to rush to my head over the stadium debate again. Because the more we liken the transportation bill to the Twin Stadium, the more I want to vote against it. And I'm not going to vote against this bill, but the reality is, from a financing perspective, the Twin Stadium was a raw deal for Hennepin County taxpayers. And so I'd hate to use that as a justification for us to replicate a raw deal because we made the mistake once. But backing up as it relates to the mode, I agree with you, Senator Dibble and Senator Murphy, that given the protections we have in place through our process, where we decide to have rail transit in the long run is far more beneficial. And I think that we obviously have to find that funding source. I'm going to vote for the bill, even though I've made it very clear over time that I support a referendum for a metro sales tax, largely because of the tax burden that we've heard expressed from other members here today. And, we'll have the vote of the people on the legacy bill. One that will hit folks on an everyday basis that really isn't related to where we're going to spend that money. The same is the case in this case, where this has a pretty big impact on people's lives from an everyday perspective as they pay that sales tax. And so I think it's reasonable for folks to have a swing at that, and I have confidence that folks in the metro area would pass that. I think what it also would do is it would give us the opportunity to bind the entire region. And from our past discussions, I have some concerns about how we don't bind the entire region with the sales tax. We don't take an entirely regional approach because we allow counties to either not enact or to back out. But I don't want to sound that I'm overly critical of the bill, because I think the bill in total is a good job and a job well done and something that's important and needed. But I didn't want this debate to go by without also expressing the concerns I have about the growing sales tax burden on residents. And I rarely would also let the stadium reference go by without as one Hennepin County resident, and I voted for the Twin Stadium. I voted for a referendum. I voted for calling them the Hennepin County Twins. I did everything I could possibly do, and at the end of the day, I thought that was an important amenity. Ultimately, that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to let my concerns over the referendum be overcome by our need to accomplish this. But I do think that it would be a better bill and probably appealing to more people if we had that opportunity.
Senator Seaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd just like to commend the authors for a good bill here. I think one thing that the public doesn't need to be reminded of, but I'm constantly thinking of, is that just a couple months ago, the bridge collapsed in Minneapolis. Yet there are bridges throughout the state that have worse ratings, have been inspected and found to have need to be replaced, perhaps even more than the bridge that collapsed. So I want to specifically thank Senator Murphy for including the provision in the bill for the bridge replacement fund that is very clear that it would provide the money right away to replace the Hastings Bridge, which has a lower deficiency rating than the 35 Bridge that collapsed. And that, of course, after the collapse of the 35 Bridge is it's hard to underestimate how important that is to constituents in Hastings and in the region. They want to see that bridge replaced, and this bill provides the money for that. And unfortunately, the governor's proposal for bonding for local bridges, that doesn't provide the money that's needed to replace the Hastings Bridge. But this bill does do that. So thank you for that portion of this bill. I wanted to ask, switching topics here, about the Gears Committee. And this came up last year, too, but does, and Senator Dibble, perhaps you know this, does a grant that's awarded have to be entirely located within the metropolitan region to be eligible for a grant, or can a portion of the project that is within the region be used for funding? I'm specifically thinking about high-speed rail that would come up from Chicago and come through up into St. Paul. I would certainly want to make sure that the portion that's within the region could be used, monies that's generated could be used for that transit project.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as I understand, but I can't pull out the language, I believe that money that's raised by this mechanism, the sales tax that's raised in the metropolitan transportation area, could participate with an effort like that. But there would have to be some way of making sure that the money that's spent, stays within the geographic boundaries. So, for example, we're not spending money that we raise here for trackage that is in Wisconsin or is outside the area that the money is raised in. So that doesn't preclude some participation, mixing resources for that purpose, helping with the Union Depot, for example, or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senator Wong.
Mr. Chair, 2 points. One is that I wanted to comment on Senator Ortman's point earlier about the sales tax and the difference in the metro area and in the other areas where they have to do a referendum. I did have a bill to make that statewide, and I guess some people thought it wasn't a good idea. But I did have a bill to make it statewide without a referendum. That way it's the entire state that's contributing to that, and that would raise enough funds for us to do what we need to do. But I think people thought that wasn't a good idea. So now we're down to where, you know, we're permitted to do without a referendum in the metro area, and if other people think it's a good idea and they want to join, then they'll do a referendum and let their citizens support that. But I did have that bill. The other thing that I just wanted to put on the record, and I think Senator Dibble understands this, is that, you know, in Ramsey County, with respect to the Union Depot project, Senator Dibble, the leadership at Met Council has been very public about not supporting that or saying that that's not a priority. And so I'm looking at the mechanism that's created for the expenditure of these dollars. And to a large extent, I mean, I'm confident that as we move forward, I think good ideas will surface the top. But, you know, I am concerned that in terms of projects being consistent with the Met Council's plan, that the fact that the Met Council gets to sort of have veto power if they deem it to be inconsistent with their plan. And if signals are being sent from Met Council leadership that certain plans or certain projects are not a priority, some of us who are around the table are just a little bit nervous about that. And I wanted to put that on the record, and I understand, and I hope that people who are involved in this are fully cognizant of some of those differences. I mean, I want to support this because I think it's a great effort, but and I don't want to taint with the process that you've all worked really hard to put together. But I am nervous, and I am very aware of some of the politics of what's going on. So I just wanted to make sure that I communicate that to you.
Right. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
And I appreciate that, and I share that concern and brought that perspective into the conversation with the Met Council, who was asking for full veto authority, which I found to be interesting, given that they weren't supporting the bill or providing any political heft to get the bill passed. But nevertheless, I thought it was important to have that conversation and be aware of, you know, their priorities and their view. And so we came up with a compromise. It may not be a perfect compromise, but it's a compromise to allow for a little back and forth when the Met Council might find the plan to be inconsistent, mm-hmm. and try to preempt a project from being funded.
Yeah, so. Yeah, Mr. Chairman and yeah. Senator Mwah, to that point, you know, part of the Senate's addition to this bill is the very last paragraph in the bill that talks, and Senator Dibble touched on this earlier, about trying to approach federal government in a holistic approach to build all of our transit lines. The discussions that I've had with the Met Council in regards to that concept was that, well, some of these lines that we're talking about don't meet the federal CEI. But the thing that's important to note is that the federal CEI changed after we had our initial plan put together back, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. And so the feds kind of changed the way by which they wanted to fund these transit lines. I think it's totally inappropriate what the federal government did, and I know that Congressman Obestar feels the same way. Some of the parameters that they brought into the new CEI, they were put in place so that the federal government could deny a lot of these rail lines access to federal money. That's the sole reason it was put in there, was to winnow away a lot of projects that had a lot of good merit to them. Red Rock, for example. And that was real discouraging to the people that have been working on some of these projects for 15, 20 years. To have the federal government come in and change the rules in the middle of the game. Now, I don't know about anybody here, but we all grew up playing sandlot ball out in the backyard, and everybody runs to first, then to second, then to third. The federal government, what they wanted you to do was to run to first and then out to right field and then through the bullpen and then over to second and then back to first. And it's crazy, Mr. Chairman, absolutely crazy. And it's the administration's it was their intention to make this process so hard that it discouraged people from even making the applications. hopefully that's going to change in the next few years, and I know that Congressman Obistar is working to do that. But once again, the federal government, they did that basically not because they have a disdain for transit, but because they didn't have any money either. And the reason why places like Salt Lake City and Denver and some of these other places moved ahead of us is because they have a guaranteed source of revenue. And that's what we're going to do in this bill. We're going to have a guaranteed, dedicated source of revenue for transit, and we're going to approach the federal government. We're going to get all this stuff built, period.
Senator Dibble.
I can't help but expand upon this whole CEI issue, the cost-effectiveness index. The irony of the CEI change is that some of our own projects in other metropolitan areas have been delayed. And so you can actually put a price tag on the new CEI requirements that defeats the purpose of the CEI in the first place. And some other metropolitan areas have discovered, they've just done the math and discovered they're better moving ahead without even asking for, you know, the 50% federal participation or any federal participation at all. Some have gone to just asking for like a 20% federal participation, or excuse me, less than 20%. It used to be 50. It's 50 for Hiawatha, now it's 20%. But ask for something less or foregoing it entirely. If we delay Central Corridor 1 year by not doing what we need to do in our bonding bill this year, that's a 44, or getting hung up on University of Minnesota stuff or whatever, that's a $44 million price tag right there just from 1 year's of delay, 1 year's worth of delay with the inflation that we have in construction.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, we have the A-19 in front of us, do we?
We've adopted that.
Oh, we have. Is the motion in order, or what are we ready to do here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that there's another amendment. And Mr. Chairman, you know, we've been kind of following the House along with this bill, and we've been saying that, you know, we want to kind of keep them the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, in a...
We didn't vote.
I kind of like Senator Scoy's idea on page 23, and I know that Senator Dibble likes this too, so I would hope that we could make a change here and then just tell the House that on the House floor that they've got to change the bill as well. Mr. Chairman, on page 23, line 31, and this is in the issue of Greater Minnesota has one amount that they can do. If you want to stick two words in there that basically say up to after of, between of and one half, so that it reads of up to one half, that would give those greater Minnesota counties the flexibility to do a half or three-eighths or a quarter, whatever that they may want. I think that's actually a good change to the bill, and I would be remiss in making that change, even though I, you know, knowing the pattern or the path that the bill has to take. And I think that that's a good policy change. And if Senator Scoy wants to offer that up, I'm not going to oppose.
Senator Scoy, was that your idea?
Well, it was Langseth or mine.
The chair's first.
Oh.
That's right, it was Senator.
But the chair can't make a motion, so. Oh. But I do think Senator Langseth spoke
Senator
for it. Let's get it on the table, and then we'll have some discussion. Senator Langseth moves on. Line 23.31, after the word of, insert up to, and then continue the sentence. Is that right, Council?
Yep. Sounds good.
Discussion. The authors of the bill are here. Do they support that change? Senator Sengen.
I'm glad we're doing this, and, you know, I represent Dodge County, and I can imagine they might have a project on 8th, 4th, or whatever, but maybe a half is a little heavy in terms of passing a referendum. It gives them, I think, a nice option.
With that, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like Senator Sinjim's on board. So,
all right.
On the amendment.
On the Langseth oral amendment on line 23.31. Any other discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And I think Senator Murphy and Senator Dibble, I do think that makes the bill better.
Yeah.
as it relates to the rural Minnesota provision for transit. So I appreciate your willingness to do that. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, if we can quickly, I'd just like to talk about the rest of the bill real quick. There's only a couple more pages and then...
Continue.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, on page 24 is Article 5, and this is the county state aid changes that are in the bill. Now, folks, on the old money, it's going to be on the old formula. On anything that's generated new, it's going to go on the new county state aid highway formula. This is an agreement that was checked off by all 87 counties. I'm going to say that one more time. All 87 counties approve of this change, even the counties that are not going to see an increase because of it. We all, and I represent one of those counties, every one of these counties realizes the importance of changing this formula so that we take into consideration vehicle miles and actual population. So counties like Dakota County are going to see an increase, and I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but I think Dakota County's increase was about 23%, Ms. Boyd. Under this proposal, one of the counties that I represent would see about a 17% increase, and one of the other counties would see what their normal increase would be, but they're not going to see an overabundance of any of this new money, put it that way, under this new formula. Like I said, this is agreed to by all 87 counties. It's a good change, Ms. Loveroe and those groups that represent the counties ought to be commended to getting all of these players on the same page. Real quick, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'll go to Article 6. Article 6 on page 29 are some restrictions on tolling facilities, and it's a prohibition on privatization. Starting on page on line 21, we do this for several different reasons. One, it's just plain not right. I mean, Dwight David Eisenhower, who had the political courage to stand up at a time when it was probably he didn't have to, put it that way, and said we're going to build an interstate transportation system and we're going to maintain it. He had no idea that we would be trying to sell assets off, like the state of Indiana or the city of Chicago has done. And, you know, in Minnesota, that's just not Minnesotan. We're not going to sell our state assets, and it's in the bill. I know that groups like the Truckers Association and several other groups that deal with road and bridges improvements, they don't much think that that's a good idea either, and it brings those folks on board. As a matter of fact, after we got done fixing this bill up, it's one of the first times that the Truckers Association has been on board for a gas tax increase that I can remember. And they, after we've made these changes, they're supportive of the bill. On page 31, we start with a trunk highway bridge improvement program. This is one of the ideas that came from the House. Representative Leader put this together. Once again, he went through all the bridge reports, counted up all the bridges, all the numbers, came up with a program that works, and by 2018, we can guarantee our constituents that they will be traveling on safe bridges in the state. page 33, we starting on line 17, are the reinstatement fees for those individuals who have had their driver's license revoked. It lets them pay this back in two portions instead of just one. A lot of low-income workers couldn't come up with $400 or $500 at one shot to get their license back. You know what we found out in our state, that 90% of all those people who violate our DWI laws on the first go, that's the last time we ever hear of them. A lot of these people are working men and women, and we need to provide a way for them to get their license back so that they can continue their employment. This is one way of doing it. This is one of the things that Senator Latz had came up with. And, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, because I think that Senator Dibble has talked about the
last couple chapters already. So that's the bill.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, I just wanted to, it's easy to just glance at this and think there's a new surcharge, but there isn't, where on line 22, where $40 is struck and 430 is inserted. That's just a reflection of current law, because that $430 was phased in, and so the phase-in language is all that's being stressed.
Well, it's not new money.
It's not a new fee increase. There was some confusion in the last hearing about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Murphy, Senator Dibble. Do we have other amendments? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A21 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this amendment will actually require a change on line 5. Line 5 should read as follows. A21, line 20, delete as follows. Insert.
Senator Ortman incorporates that oral amendment suggested by counsel. Senator Ortman, on the A21 amendment, tell us what you're proposing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was what we discussed a little bit earlier with respect to the half-cent sales tax. It would change it to one-quarter sales tax, up to one-quarter in the greater Minnesota area and one-quarter in the metropolitan areas once the counties opt into the program. And then it would make all of the funding for transit, not just for the other purposes, but 100% of it would be for transit.
So it takes the flexible account out.
Right. What I'm concerned about is that it's not transparent. It looks like it might be a bit of a slush fund. They get to choose what they want to spend it on. It could be local roads. It could be bridges. It could be transit. But if we're going to say that this is a proposal that the sales tax is for transit, I think it should be the sales tax is for transit 100%. And this will, I believe, it has the potential to sell itself. And if you show them what they're spending money on, I think maybe people will support this. But I think that if it looks like it might be another slush fund where the money can be moved around any way you want, then I think that you're going to lose support for it. So I would hope that the members would agree with 0.25% completely dedicated to transit.
Mm-hmm. Author of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll speak first and then let Senator Dibble talk more specifically about the transit portion of this. Mr. Chairman, I think that this would be a mistake to adopt this amendment, Senator Ortman, and I say that for a couple different reasons. One, in the metropolitan area, and the reason why there's this slush fund that you categorize in there, we call it a flexible fund. But one of the reasons why we have that in there is that the needs in the metropolitan area are much greater, both in transit and in roadways, on a dollar basis than they are in greater Minnesota. Greater Minnesota, we can buy a mile of road for about $850,000. In the metropolitan area, it's well past $3.1 million now. That was the figure that I had from 2 years ago, and you just figure in inflation, and it's probably closer to $3.75 million to build a mile of road in the metropolitan area. Plus, where we have the majority of the what they call big-ticket items as far as bridges, they're in the metropolitan area. Places like the Lowry Street Bridge, I think that's over in Senator Pogemiller's district or right next to it. That's a bridge that needs to be replaced immediately. It's a county state aid bridge. Some of this money would be able to be used to do that. Hennepin County couldn't afford to replace that bridge on their own. I don't know of any county that could afford to pay for a major river crossing across the Mississippi or Minnesota River or St. Croix on their own. They're just way too expensive. The Lafayette Bridge is probably north of $400 million. I-35W Bridge was $393, I believe. Lowry Street Bridge is, like I said, it's a county state aid bridge, and I know there's people from Hennepin County here, and they could probably tell me if my figures are wrong, but it's over $100 million. And so you look at the bridge work that needs to be done in the metropolitan area and the road work,
You extrapolate some of the numbers, and even with the increase in the gas tax that's in here and tab fees, it's still not even close to meeting the metropolitan area's needs. I'll let Senator Dibble talk about the transit portion. But the point I wanted to make about the flexible fund is we leave it up to the locals on how that's spent. Now, if their priority is for a transit project, they'll spend it on a transit project. If there's a bridge or a corridor that needs to be upgraded, they'll spend it on that. So it gives them a little bit of flexibility, and that's why we put it in the bridge. And I wouldn't call it a slush fund. I'd call it a flexible fund.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the ideas, the amendment coming forward so we can have more discussion about this. I would say at this point I think it's probably not well advised to take this amendment for a couple of reasons. One is this bill represents establishing a partnership between state and local units of government, much like the local government aid program represents. So it's about working in conjunction and working in a collaborative fashion state level with locals, as well as locals working with each other. And we're asking, as such, we're asking these local units to take an affirmative step and enact this sales tax and to form the Joint Powers Board and figure out the terms and conditions and, you know, the purposes under which they're going to participate. And, you know, even within the 7-county metro area, much less the adjoining 9 counties as well as Stearns beyond, have differing, varying sorts of needs. That's why we introduced the minimum guarantee concept. And, you know, and some are thinking that they need maybe a little bit more emphasis on some roads. Also, there's associated improvements that are made to our road and bridge system that accompany transit improvements. And so this is kind of a lengthy collaboration at which it took to arrive at this language. And I think that would violate that spirit in which this bill was crafted.
Senator Pogelmeier.
Chairman, I don't think at any point this would be a good amendment. That's $1 billion of things that won't get done in the metropolitan area. If we want to choke off the economic growth of our state, we should start reducing the size of this bill. So I just wanted to add, I mean, at some point, no, I don't think it's a good idea at any point. If this bill gets too small, I don't think it's worth passing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Pogelmeier's point, Senator Pogelmeier makes a good point, and I think I said that earlier that, you know, we've winnowed this bill down. I know that in previous years, even when Senator Arata was here and we passed the bill back in 2005, I believe. And don't quote me on that because I tell you, I just...
It was
2005. Okay. That age is starting to catch up here a little bit. But, you know, at that time, that bill was bigger than this one. And the one that we passed last year was bigger than that one and bigger than this one. So we've brought it down substantially. I mean, from well over $1 billion of new spending a year to about 800 and...
48.
Yeah, about 850 million a year. So it's already, the price tag has already come down. If it continues to slide down, you know, we're going to have a hard time keeping our promises to people. And that's why we're here. We have overpromised in the past years and underdelivered in a major way. We have taken 65% of our road maintenance money that we were spending to keep the public safe, and we took that money and now we're spending 65% on new construction and only have 35% for maintenance. And it's just plain not enough. And it's the same money that's been on the table this year, last year, the year before that. It's all the same money, but we swapped around how we used it, and now we are at a critical point in our state's history of are we going to provide the maintenance that we need to continue to have a decent road system, or are we going to just turn our paved roads into gravel roads? And in greater Minnesota, that's what's happening. We've got roads, one down in Senator Sparks' district, where the county sheriff is writing people tickets for driving on the shoulder because it's smoother than the road. What do we want? We want a state that has gravel roads, or do we want a state that has a rideability index that's close to a national standard? And any other if we winnow the bill down any further, we're going to have gravel roads.
Any other discussion on the A21 amendment? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Pogremiller maybe has forgotten that this is not just a sales tax bill. It's also a gas tax bill. And it's $7 to $8 billion worth of new money for transportation. I think there's more than enough here. And I think that we have to balance what we do here, our goals for the future in this transit system. We have to balance that against the current economic hardship of Minnesotans. Our economy is in recession. The people you're asking to pay these sales taxes are the poor, they're the unemployed, they're the elderly. And so I concede maybe we should be having a dedicated source of funding for transit. But why do we have to bite off more than Minnesotans can chew? I think that you've imposed a great deal on Minnesotans in this bill already with all the gas taxes. I've gotten deluged in my office with opposition to the gas tax. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the other aspects of this bill, the sales tax. I think there are others in this committee that are equally concerned about the regressive nature of this part of the bill. I don't think that it's inappropriate at all to talk about how much we should impose on them, especially in light of the constitutional amendment out there and the fact that some of us are still smarting about the sales tax for the Twin Stadium. How much more can Minnesotans afford in the sales tax? And so, Senator Pogemiller, I maybe think you should offer the amendment to put 1% on here instead of the 0.5%. If you really believe that this isn't enough, maybe you should offer that amendment and see how that goes. Truly, I think this sales tax provision should have a referendum on it throughout the entire state. If it's good enough for greater Minnesota, it should be good enough for the counties and the Twin Cities that are going to be asked to pay for this. I would get there, but I don't think that I'm going to succeed on the 0.25%. I may have to offer that amendment on the floor. But it seems to me that we should be concerned about the overall tax burden of Minnesotans in this committee, and I think it's always appropriate to have this conversation, Senator Pogemiller. I would hope that the members would support this amendment.
On the A21 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment's not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
May I move the bill?
Let's see if we have anybody who wants to testify on it before we actually get to that point. Is there anybody in the audience who wants to testify on the bill as amended? Keep in mind the indexing is out of it, so we don't need to talk about that any longer. Today, at least.
Mr. Chairman, I think they've come to support the bill. Maybe
they're probably closer than they were earlier this morning.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and Erin Sexton, our transportation lobbyist, had to be called away to a different meeting, so she could not be here this morning, so you get me. You are correct that we're closer this morning than we have been in the past to supporting a transportation bill. We do, I think as most of you know, that we do support a variety of funding sources for transportation, roads, bridges, and transit. Let me focus on what the remaining issues that we see with this bill, and that centers around the half-cent metropolitan sales tax. We have consistently opposed a metropolitan area sales tax for transit and roads for a couple of reasons. First, Minnesota businesses pay about 45% of the sales tax. So it is a significant business tax, and this would certainly be an increased tax burden on Minnesota companies in the metropolitan area. Second, the regions around the country that have adopted regional sales taxes for transit have much lower state and local tax burdens than Minnesota does, so they have more capacity to raise revenue and not have a have that impact their competitive position than Minnesota does. And I think Ms. Larson will touch on this in a little bit more detail in a second. This year, our board has made a change in our position with respect to transit funding, however, and they do want to find $100 million per year until 2020 to fund the Tier 1 transit projects and the Southwest Light Rail Corridor. We have suggested a couple of ways to get to that dollar amount. First, increasing the fare box, which I know you've already talked about today. That would just be for light rail lines, bus rapid transit, and express busways. It would not impact other types of bus routes. And second would be to try to capture some of the property tax valuation increases along transit lines so that you can keep the operating funding for transit linked to more closely linked to the benefits of the transit line itself. We also do recognize that those two sources probably don't get you to $100 million. And so if the legislature chooses to look at a sales tax, we would suggest that it should be at the lowest rate possible just for transit. It should have a referendum, and it should be sunset in 2020 when we can reevaluate then how the funding is going, what is needed, and hopefully at that point in time the value capture funding mechanism would be fully kicked in and able to fund the operating costs of the lines. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you mentioned that in these other urban areas, the sales tax is lower. I've been in Denver, Colorado, where they have the half percent sales tax, as I understand it, and I paid a higher sales tax than I pay in Minnesota, the for state and local. I think the state is a little lower, but with state and local, it was like 7.5%, I think.
Mr. Chair and Senator Langseth, I was referring to the total state and local tax burden. So when you look at all of the state and local taxes that individuals and businesses pay, Minnesota has a much higher burden than many of the other regions that have adopted local sales taxes. There's more capacity to raise revenue from in those areas from businesses and individuals than there is in Minnesota.
Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jill Larson from the Minnesota Business Partnership. I just want to echo Mr. Hesse's comments. We're supporting the Chamber's position on transportation. And to just to go into a little bit more detail on the comments Mr. Hesse made about the overall tax burden, I do have a handout if H could hand it out. His comment about the other areas that did pass a metro sales tax for transit in terms of them having an overall lower tax burden. For example, I know Utah has been used as an example, Colorado, and Minnesota's overall tax burden, we rank 12th highest in the overall state and local tax burden. Utah ranks 42nd. Arizona ranks 35th. Colorado ranks 28th. So you can see that we have a much higher overall tax burden in those areas, and so as Mr. Hesse mentioned, those areas had a little bit more capacity to absorb a tax increase, and that's why we are also opposed to the half-cent metro sales tax and just think it's just too much of a burden, especially when you, as Senator Ortman mentioned earlier, when you add it to the potential increased sales tax burden if the constitutional amendment passes. Thank you.
Ms. Larson, did I hear you say you support the Chamber's position? Does that mean the partnership supports a gas tax increase?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's true.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't looked at this in probably a little too much for me to absorb very quickly, but we've had this running discussion with the Chamber, and I just disagree. I think that many of the other metropolitan areas that have enacted a portion of their sales tax for transit purposes already had a higher sales tax. Dallas at 1%. Their total sales tax now is 8.3%. Denver at 1%. Their total sales tax is 7.6. Phoenix at 8.1. Has a half cent sales tax. San Diego 7.8% total. They have a half cent. Seattle 0.8% sales tax. They're at 8.8%, and it goes on. Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Cleveland, New York, all higher in their sales tax than us, and they use sales tax for transit purposes. And I think we've dealt with this issue in the tax committee about overall tax rates as we compare nationally. And at one time, sure, we were up in the top five, but we're right in the middle of the pack now. And so I think we just maybe have a difference of perspective, or we're looking at different numbers, but I think at a minimum we're right in line with other states and regions that are doing this. This is not extraordinary.
And Mr. Chairman, bottom line is economic development. These places that Senator Dibble talked about that had higher sales tax rates than we do in the metropolitan area, their economic outlook is far brighter than here in the state of Minnesota. Those are all numbers you all can look up. I mean, you can go to one of the websites that the U.S. government posts, and you can see all those areas have much more economic activity than we do here in the metropolitan area. Now, here's another guarantee that I can make the members of this committee, that this bill, as it stands today, is going to grow over 30,000 jobs the very first year of enactment. Those are going to be construction jobs. Are they going to last forever? They could. They may not. But let's look at what a good build-out of a transportation system does. Every one of those areas that Senator Dibble talked about, their economic capacity is moving ahead of the state of Minnesota. And if we want a transportation system that allows businesses to create new opportunity, we need to pass this bill, period. The longer we wait, the harder it gets, and the further behind we fall. This is an economic package that equals or surpasses Senator Lanxess' bonding bill. These jobs, I believe, are forever. And the spinoff jobs that they're going to create may not be forever, but it's going to be for a long time, and it's going to improve our economic standing.
Ms. Larson, I'm looking at your handout, and I'm wondering, Minnesota ranks 12th. Do you know offhand where we rank in federal funds we receive back per capita? I mean, it seems like part of the problem, Minnesota, is we don't get enough federal funding for things, and I'm wondering if that isn't what's helping contribute to our tax burden. We often hear people talk about that for the dollars we send to Washington, we get much less than a dollar back, and we're at or near the very bottom. Do you know offhand where we are in federal funds we receive back for every dollar we send out? Because I do think that may contribute to some of the local burden.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have those exact numbers, but I agree. I know we do pay in more than we get back. I'm sure we can get that for you.
Does anybody else want to testify on the bill? Senator Murphy?
Thank you, Mr.
We've made some significant changes here today, and I'm wondering if Senator Cohen is aware of them, because the bill definitely looks differently than it did when it left his committee. Has he been in the loop in any way as to the taking out of the indexing and the increasing of the tax? Is there any reason for him to see it again? Or could you have that conversation with him before we get to the floor so that he knows it looks a little different than when it left his committee?
Oh, I think he knew when it left his committee that it was going to look different after it left here, and we explained to him a lot of the changes that were going to be made, and I don't think Senator Cohen has a problem with any of them. We're not disturbing the general fund impact any more than when we left his committee.
The bonding changed significantly, though.
Yeah, but that bonding is paid for with out of the trunk highway fund, and you know Senator Cohen doesn't really have a dog in that fight.
We do appropriate it though, right?
Well, I think finance does. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, finance does appropriate those bond indebtedness payments. But
Senator Dibble moves that Senate file 2521 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any other discussion? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Congratulations, Senator Murphy and Senator Dibble. Very nice job.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Committee members.
Members, before you leave, in your packet is some homework. And I don't think Senator Pogelmiller was here when I mentioned this yesterday, but Senator Cohen has asked that this tax committee try to find some cuts. And we either need to do that in the aids and credits section of our budget or in this tax expenditure report. So you have a tax expenditure report. If you could look, we're gonna hear it in committee somewhere here in the next couple of weeks, but if you could take a little time getting yourself familiar with it, I think it would be helpful to our discussion when we
so we'll
have the department
this
go through
report,
it. Committee adjourned.
Today.